When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger. For thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week, and up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. So you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Hi, welcome to the Gospel of Kinnison. This is James Kinnison. I'm your host. Welcome to my personal audio journal. It's been a few weeks, and it has been a little bit upsy and downsy as far as mood goes and energy levels. So I've been taking less of one of my anti-anxiety medicines because it makes me sleepy. All my pills, actually three of my top pills that I need have sleepiness as a side effect. And I've been very sleepy. I think I've mentioned that on the show. I want a nap after I get off work. I would gladly at times call out and go to bed if I could. I actually missed last Friday. And then one of the days this week, I called in late so that I didn't have to get up. It was mostly depression, though. There's a medication that is my primary antidepressant, and I don't take it twice a week because of side effects, okay? And I don't want to get into the dirty details, but I'll say it this way. Jen and I go out twice a week, and so I don't take this pill twice a week because of its side effects. But that, combined with taking less of my anti-anxiety, pushed me into a down spiral that I haven't felt that bad in a long time. Like, I haven't been bedridden sad for a while. And that's the way it was from Friday of last week all the way through. I made it to work in on Monday, but Tuesday, I couldn't do it. And I came in late. I asked to come in at 1. I came in late. You guys remember a few episodes ago, I said I'm one bad day from ruining everything. That's the way it felt. It felt exactly like when I was in Florida, working full-time as a children's pastor. I slowly started realizing I could no longer do the duties that were expected of me. I turned in my resignation, and he wouldn't accept it. I thought that was great, but there was still things I couldn't do. He went to the board about it, and they were completely not understanding and thought I was trying to get out of work. And then they kept not understanding, but the pastor would tolerate it until we got to an event that I could not do. And that was the annual recap speech. Every year we had to have a church meeting, and each pastor would get up and talk about all the awesome things that happened that year. And I had literally had the year from hell, and I had canceled nearly every event, had not done anything, VBS, children's choir, you know, nothing. I'd done no volunteer anything. And I certainly didn't have the energy to try to spin anything into a positive. So part of it was me not wanting to lie. And the rest of it was me not being able to have an angle, to have enough energy to create an angle where I could spin it as a positive. Okay. So I wouldn't have wanted to do it anyway. Okay. Cause it's kind of lying. And then I didn't have the energy to even try. And so I told him this, and he said, well, what am I going to tell the board when they come back? And I said, tell them that you've accepted my resignation. And he said, are you serious? I said, absolutely. It's not what I wanted to do, but that's what happened. He said, well, I meet with him on Friday. This was a Wednesday. He said, call me if something changes. And I never called him. They announced my resignation. And I asked them because I was so so at the time, so ashamed of being depressed, I asked him not to say why, which was a mistake, because everyone, church people and everybody else, when there's a blank space, they always fill it in with something negative. And when a pastor steps down and there's no reason given, it's automatically assumed that it's got to be a moral failure, right? So a couple people did go out of their way to ask, and I answered them when they asked directly, because I figured they deserved that they cared enough to come directly to me. The church was rampant with gossips and people that were passive aggressive and stuff. So a couple folks that I knew were real, you know, came and said, James, you know, what's the problem? Is it, you know? And I said, I'm just depressed. I can't do the job anymore. And they're like, oh man, my aunt, you know, had that or whatever. So it was a good experience that way. But in the way it affects me now, and the reason why I went through it is because when I called out the second time in the same week, I started wondering if I was gonna ruin the job, like I did in Florida. Started feeling the same feelings. So it was like super bad, because I really like my job and I like the people I work with. It's just a place that I can thrive. Is it the best atmosphere? No. Is it clean? No. It's an office that was probably remodeled in the 50s, and it's in a 100-year-old building that's a warehouse, you know, full of people that are crafting and building and sawing and welding, and so there's dust everywhere, and there's my mouse droppings on my desk once in a while. It's ridiculous, but I'm fine. I love it. I love it there. I like my boss. I feel accepted and all that. I don't want to ruin it, is my point. So it does have value to me. I get to be creative, which is something I never expected. And I get to do stuff I like to do all day, you know, even the monotonous stuff of website design and Shopify moderation. I don't know. Working on Shopify. Even that's fun. I mean, it's fun. I get to sit behind a desk. It's and work on a computer all day. It's a dream. So I have a lot to lose. Okay. And so fear was creeping in. I'm like, there's nobody else going to hire me to do something like this. This is a once in a lifetime shot for me. I'm never going to do this again. Can't mess it up. But sure enough, felt like I had. And so when I texted him that second time, I felt like I owed him an explanation. I said, there is a legitimate reason for me calling in like this. I said, I can tell you if you want, but there is a legitimate reason, because I'm kind of back to being ashamed of it, because I don't want to be known as the depressed guy. I don't want people to have to tiptoe around me. I don't want people to misunderstand me, because there still is a stigmatism about mental illness. Now it's kind of popular. You know, everybody has a mental illness now. All the young people do. And, you know, it's whatever. But in my world, and the people I work with, and the old folks, you know, they still combine sadness with depression. And I used to do it too. I used to believe that depression was just people that didn't want to get up and enjoy their life, you know, and deal with things. You know, it was the reason my real dad left my mom. It was the reason my mom laid in bed for 3 years and didn't do anything. It was an escape. It was laziness. And I found out that is not true when it happened to me. And there was nothing I wanted more than to keep doing what I was doing for the church and for God and my family and keep crap together. And I tried. I did it for years. I kept it together. And then I couldn't. I just slowly got to the point where I couldn't do it anymore. And I just foresaw all that coming again. And I don't want to be known here as that person. You know what I'm saying? because at Sheffield, I'm still a hero. At my Kansas City job that I worked for 10 years, I'm a hero. I'm going to tell you more about that in a minute. I'm a freaking hero. And I love that. I love that there's a part of me, a part of my life that is seen that way. Because I look back at the last 10 years, basically from 40 to 50, as failure. But I kind of want to get out from under James as the depressed guy. Because my head has come above water. And it is mostly good times now. There's very few downtimes. And if this was my downtime, it was very short. And it wasn't that low. But it was scaring me. It was scaring me to the point that I thought it was going to get super low. Because it didn't go that long far. And it didn't last that long. But it went down further than it's been in a while. Like I said, I was bedridden. You know, I was having anxiety pains in my chest again. I haven't had panic attack in 2 years or something like that. It was stupid scary. I'm like, I'm going to ruin everything, you know, just and that pressure just adds to your anxiety and makes it worse. And it's just a downward spiral. And so, my boss is awesome though, because while I was in there, he said, by the way, he said, if you want to tell me what's going on, you can, but you don't have to. I said, well, I just want you to know more than anything that my goal is to be here 100% and give you 100% and to not flake out on you. Cause I feel like I've flaked out on you recently. He says, well, yeah, but it's not a big deal. And I'll let you know if it becomes a big deal. And so that said two things to me, whether he meant it or not. I think he meant both, because he's a smart guy and he used to be a lawyer. So he uses his words very carefully. It meant two things. One, it meant you have some grace because you have not run. I'm not out of patience with you. You know what I'm saying? And then secondly, I got that, but there is a limit. And I'm glad he said that, you know, like when he said yet, you know, you haven't gotten to that point yet. Like there is a point, James, there is a point. And I respect that. I understand that. In my last job that I stepped down from, I'm the one that called that point and said, tell them to accept my resignation because the pastor wasn't able to accept that. But I respect that because there are days where if I push a little harder, if I push just a little harder than all the way, like I always push all the way, but if I push just a little harder than that or have the support of my wife to help me, I can get out of bed and go. I don't know what it is. Like trying to use a toy car that needs to be wound up. And you don't have the strength to wind it up. If I can get wound up just a little bit, then I can keep going. You know, once I'm going, I can keep going. So that statement of not yet will help me so that when I have to do it, I know I can. But when I can at all do it, I'm going to have to get up and go because there is a limit. And I think that's a lot more honest and a lot more fair than what I was led to believe in Florida, where I thought there was grace, where I thought there was understanding. And there was from the pastor, but he didn't run the church. The board did, and nobody told me that. And so when he went to the board and explaining what I was struggling with and how I probably needed to go part-time for a while, came back with questions like, are you even called to the ministry? Are you even called to be here? I thought I was too good for their little church because I was from a mega church. They had all these negative feelings about me because they didn't know me. And these were people I'd been to their house for dinner. And anyway, I don't want to get hung up on it. It's just, I was reliving all that while I was struggling this week. But things are good. I went back on all my medications. I had been taking 1.5 of one of my anti-anxieties. And the reason why is because of the sleepiness. I told my psychiatrist that, you know, I'm sleepy. I'm tired all the time. I want to sleep all the time. Like, just, I'll go to bed at 8:30 and wake up at 7 and still be tired and want to sleep. You know, I'm tired all the time. She says, well, you've lost all this weight and your medication hasn't changed. It and your top three meds give you, you know, sleepiness. So let's try one of them and we'll start with the one that does it the most. And it's your anti-anxiety. And I said, fine. So I went down from 2 pills to 1.5 and that seemed to be fine. And then she said, well, let's go down to 1. And I did that and anxiety attacks and stuff started happening. And that combined with the very bad day that I called in, that was a skip. That was Wednesday, I guess. That was a skip my meds day. And so I decided until things level out or come back up or whatever we want to call it, I call them ups and downs. So whenever I get back up, I will start skipping my antidepressants again. But for now, until the foreseeable future, I am not going to skip. And that comes with some sacrifices on my part. I'm not going to tell you what they are. But it only becomes an issue on Wednesday nights and Thursday nights, or Saturday nights, rather. But you know what? It's a small price to pay to be able to keep my crap together and be dependable, predictable, you know, even, so that I can serve my family and my job, you know, properly. So, you know, I'm 51. I'm not 21 anymore. You know, I can handle stuff. So, speaking of being a legend at my old church in in Kansas City, a friend of mine who used to be the youth pastor at the old church, Sheffield in Kansas City, sent me a picture. And truth be told, somebody had texted me about this thing that I'm going to tell you about a year ago, but I didn't know what to make of it. Like, I thought they were just giving me a compliment. So let me tell you about it, and then I'll tell you what it is. It was a picture of a plaque. And I recognized the plaque because one year in children's ministry, we raised more money for the Boys and Girls Missionary Challenge. Used to be called Crusade, but they took out Crusade. It's a good idea. The Boys and Girls Missionary Challenge, we raised more money than any other church in the Southern Missouri District. And what they did was give us a pretty nice sized global, you know, flat globe image of the world. And every stone in it was from that country. And it had Mother of Pearl. Like, I don't know how genuine it was. They were, you know, it's probably a couple $100. And it had a little plaque, Sheffield Family Life Center, top giver, 2007, or whatever it was. And I hated that plaque when we got it. I hated it because, you know why? Because every one of my kids in my children's church of 300 kids, the majority of them were from very low income families. And the fact that they raised money and got that much and beat all the other churches, including the rich church, James River, was crazy. It was insane. And I was so proud of them. And I thought, how many of my kids raised all that money that went into buying this stupid plaque, this big gaudy painting? But even though I had an issue with it, I like a YouTube plaque for getting 100,000 viewers, I hung it up outside of my chapel on the wall so that the kids could tell their parents. Because, you know, it's not about me, it's about them. So they got to go and say, look what we got. We were, you know, it's like a trophy for them. So that's good. I think a trophy would have been cheaper, but whatevs. So I'm just like, you know, that's $200 out of the pocket of some person overseas. That's just kind of the way I think about it. So That's up on the wall with a little tiny gold and black plaque in the corner. Well, the photo that I was sent made me cry. Because someone, and I don't know who, I kind of suspect I know who. And I'm going to dig. I'm going to find out. Somebody put a littler plaque over it. And it just says, Pastor James, the best children's pastor in the world. It's made out of the same material. It wasn't there when I moved there. When I put it up, it wasn't there when I left. But somewhere in the last 13 years or however long it's been, somebody made that at a trophy shop and attached it to that plaque. And I'm surprised, first of all, that it's still hanging up, you know? And I'm surprised that someone would put that up there, because don't they still have a children's pastor? Wouldn't you not want that children's pastor to have to see that? You know? But I'm going to tell you, when my friend sent me that picture, I was like, I got to go cry for a while. And I did. I did. If I had to put money on it, I think it was my old boss.
At Planet Fitness, we're declaring it. This is the year of getting stronger, and you can get started now by saving when you join today. We have all the best-in-class equipment you could ever need, and you can work out your way on your time at any convenient location near you. Most open 24 hours. So let's do this. Join Planet Fitness today and save. Just $1 down, $15 a month. See Home Club for details.
Because I left Sheffield, first of all, because my friend and mentor, David Godbout, was kind of let go from there. And he was the one I had followed from Central Florida out to Kansas City because of his church. And, you know, I interned under him. I was a middle school pastor, youth assistant, bus captain, you know, the whole thing underneath him. And then was promoted into full-time ministry as a children's pastor. And then the new pastor took over, the pastor's son. And somehow or another, David got let go. And it hurt him, and it hurt me, because I'm like, well, if David doesn't have a space here, I'm not long for this world. Because I was discipled under this man. I am him. I think like him. I work like him. I have the same goals and aspirations as him. I have the same drives and ambitions and purpose as him. And so I knew my days were numbered there. And sure enough, you know, I was doing bus ministry, and we were bringing in two busloads of kids. We kept it small on purpose. We kept it to very, very local kids, kids that their parents could easily start coming to church if we did anything special, or if they decided to start coming as a family. And we would feed them dinner, and then we'd do a whole children's church, and then let them play. And we got so successful that we needed to add a third bus, but we didn't have workers. And I went to that pastor, and I asked him, would he make an announcement? I said, this is something that used to get done for us. And when I do it, nobody responds. But when the pastor says it, you know, there's always a response. And he said, no, we're not doing announcements like that anymore. And I had been struggling at that point anyway. The depression had already started creeping in as a general feeling of doom. Like, all of a sudden, the world wasn't my oyster. All of a sudden, there was not this feeling of I can do everything and anything I want. It was just everything is doomed. And so you combine him saying, no, I'm not going to do that. You need to do it on your own. I realized that I wasn't fighting against the enemy trying to keep this ministry going. I was fighting against the vision of my pastor. So, right or wrong, what I did was shut down the ministry. And it was one of the most painful things I ever did to the workers, to the kids, to myself. But I, at the time, and still today, believe that it was the right thing to do, even though it was a hard thing to do, because the church wasn't supporting it. And I couldn't do something, couldn't spend church money, couldn't spend church resources on something that wasn't being supported by the vision of my church. And let it be said that at the same time, I was running a separate children's ministry at the same time on Sunday nights for the church kids. And you say, well, James, why did you split them up? Why did you split them up? Shouldn't they be together? We started it that way. And I realized I was spending way too much money because church kids come with their parents, right? You don't have to spend a dime to get them through the door. But with bus kids, you got to keep it happy, exciting. You got to feed them. You got to do all this other stuff. And I realized that if I split them in half, I could do the kind of ministry that each one of them needed separately. The street kids needed more love and attention, and they needed more money spent on them. We needed prizes to get them to bring their friends and to come back themselves. We needed to bribe them to behave because we didn't have the parents back. Yeah, or the parents didn't have our backs. We couldn't tell on them. Otherwise, the parents would just keep them home, you know? So we had to bribe them to be good, you know? Church kids, they did something completely different, completely awesome. But rather than me be over there, I went with the bus kids so that it wasn't like nobody could ever say, oh, he's just throwing the bus kids away. He's not mixing them in. Well, there wasn't much of a mix because half the kids in the church were lower income families anyway, like I said. So they mixed fine. But again, I didn't need to spend the money for, you know, a bunch of kids, like 200 kids, when I could spend less money on 50 kids. So shut it down. And then I moved over to big church again, because it was across the street. Our outreach was across the street. I moved back over to the big church and I started something called life classes because I had heard that the Sunday night services were not being attended as regularly as they used to be. And when I was an intern, Sunday nights were better than Sunday morning. You know, and of course, at the time, I didn't know that churches as a whole were getting away from being, you know, Sunday night free. We used to go three times a week, Wednesday, Sunday morning, Sunday night. You know, that was just from childhood. That's what we did. So in order to try to meet the needs of my church, you know, I wasn't with bus ministry. So what did they need? They needed me to do my part to try to make kids to want to come on Sunday night. So I created something called life classes because life had become the buzzword at our church, that we're a church that where you experience real life, you know? So I called them life classes. And I invented a way to get volunteers without needing to advertise from the pulpit. I went up to random people that I knew had skills, and I said, would you do a 6-week class teaching kids what you do? So I went to a rapper poet, and I went to him and I said, would you do that? Would you have a class where kids can sign up and be a part of your class and you can teach them and help them to write poetry and raps and stuff? And he's like, oh, heck yeah. Guy had never worked with children in his life. His kid was in my children's church, but he'd never, and I would have never approached him regularly. And then I went to another lady and I said, you make amazing, you've made amazing snacks for me and my wife. Would you mind doing a small cooking class for 6 weeks? She's like, absolutely. This happened to be the wife of the rapper. Absolutely. I had a lady that played guitar. Would you mind teaching kids how to play guitar for 6 weeks? I did an art class. We had a girl that already was involved in children's ministry, but she was doing JBQ, which was Bible quiz. She was really into video games, and we had video games for pre-show. And I said, would you do a video game class? where you teach techniques and teach about fair play and teach them how to be good winners and good losers and teach them some stuff like that? She's like, absolutely. And we must have had somewhere between 10 to 13 of these life classes, and they were huge. Huge. I don't know what difference it made in the big church, but there was a lot of kids there. You know, a lot of kids, and it was so good. And then one day, it was a Friday. Everything was going great. And Friday at work, I heard we're canceling Sunday nights on a Friday. Not even an announcement. People showed up on Sunday night that never heard the announcement on Sunday morning. And at that point, I was done. It had just confirmed to me all over again that I don't have a place here. And like I said, my depression hadn't really, it had been established. I was on medication. I was on some basic stuff, but I still hadn't labeled it yet. Like it wasn't a big deal. The medicine was working, I guess is what I'll say. But I still felt crushed. I felt like my dreams had been shattered. I felt like I was slowly being trained to maintain ministry rather than grow ministry. And I don't know about how you're wired, but the way I'm wired is I have to grow. And that doesn't mean numbers. It means I need to improve. I need to do better. I need to excel. I need to do my best. And then last of all, but most importantly, is I need my kids to be growing spiritually. Because that's why we do all the other things. And maintaining is boring. It's monotonous for the kids. Maintaining is not exciting. It's what everybody does in children's ministry. They maintain. Maintaining is picking up the curriculum on Saturday night and reading through it, and then holding it in your hand on Sunday morning as you teach your kids. And you wonder why they don't pay attention. Because you put in less work preparing than they have to put in to listen. I couldn't maintain. So I assumed, you know, that it was my time to go. And so me and my wife had a sit down with the pastor, and I just said, here's all my struggles and all my issues, and here's kind of what I'm feeling. And he said, you know, if you'd have come in here a year ago or whatever, he said, I would have fought you. But he says, right now, I'm not feeling that you need to stay. The Holy Spirit is kind of telling me that it is time for you to go. It may be time for you to go. Telling you, it haunted me. Basically saying, I don't care if you stay or leave. And I'll use God's name in there too. God doesn't care if you stay or leave. But you know, the funny thing is when I prayed about it, do I leave or do I stay? I got the same answer. I got the same answer. You can go or you go stay. I'll bless you if you stay. I'll bless you if you go. And now looking back, I understand that because God knew that I was about to go through 10 years of hell. And there would have been darkness in my life if I had quit Sheffield or quit in Florida. Sheffield would have handled it better. We would have been surrounded by more friends. There would have been a support system in place. It would have been easier for my wife. But at least I'm still a legend there. They didn't know me sad. They didn't know me as a failure. This same man that let me go and was kind of happy to see me go when I was 40 years old, we were at Disney, and we were at downtown Disney in the Disney World or Disney Store. It's not Disney Store, World of Disney Store. That's what it's called. And I was talking to somebody that I'd seen. It wasn't crazy to bump into a friend there because there was one of my denomination's national gathering was in Orlando that year. So seeing somebody I knew was crazy, but not that crazy. But then I saw him and he looked kind of awkward. This is the first time we'd seen each other since I left, you know? And anyway, he pulled me aside and he said, I don't remember the exact words, but he said, you know, I let you go and I was wrong. I regret it. I didn't know what I had. That's basically what he said. And that meant a lot, you know, too little too late kind of thing too, but it meant a lot. And so I think he's the one that made that little sign. And that's pretty freaking awesome if he did. Because he put it up. He didn't call me and tell me about it. He didn't post it online. He didn't do it to be, you know, for his own benefit. Whoever did it because they knew it might take a couple years to get to me. But when it did, it would mean something. And that's the best kind of gift, is a surprise. I like organic praise rather than manufactured, you know. Because when I left, I got 10 minutes. That's what I was told. I got 10 minutes to talk to the crowd, to say goodbye. I did. I was there for 10 years. So I made up 10 one-minute statements covering what I learned in each year. And I don't remember those. If I find the notes, I will read them to you. A better prepared, better podcaster would have those ready to go. But I really thought back and went through every year and wrote about a thing I learned. And I got a standing O at the end. And the pastor came out and he said, sorry, usually we like to get a gift. When somebody's leaving, we'll have to get you one later. Never got that gift. And that's fine. That's fine, right? You know, who cares? It's token gift, right? But why say it? Why say it if you're not going to do it? Just ignore that part. Just don't say that. Nobody would have thought anything about it, especially me. But this is better than that. Best pastor in the world, James Kennison. My friend Dennis sent it to me. I'm looking at it now. James Kennison, the best children's pastor in the world. Sheffield Family Life Center on a second plaque. First place, BGMC, 2007, Southern Missouri District. And the best children's pastor in the world has an exclamation point behind it. So I used to be something big. I used to be awesome. And I'm content with that. But you know what? I'll be honest with you. Since I'm on and up, I don't think God's done with me yet. Jen asked me on a date Saturday, would you ever want to be a children's pastor again? And I said, I've thought about this a lot. I said, I would love to be somebody's backup. You know, like if they want to go on vacation, I'll do it for them. I would love to make videos for a children's pastor. I would love to help with policies and procedures and check-in procedures. I would love to share my wisdom. I would love to help them come up with object lessons and, you know, write custom curriculums and do logos and all that stuff. I said, I would love to be in the background behind and empowering a children's pastor, but I'd never want to be the front man again. Because there's just too much pressure on that. I'm not consistent. I'm not predictable. And I'm just raw. Like, if a parent came up to me and said some of the things that parents used to say to me, I would just call them out straight up. Like, why is this? Probably because you're a walking butthole. That's probably why.
Why can't you get my kids to sit still? Because you don't teach him at home. So I have to try to make him behave here. And he hates it because he doesn't know what discipline is. So I think I'm worn out. I'm too old, too crotchety. But it's made me wonder if I shouldn't get involved with somebody in children's ministry. And, you know, if you listen to the show, I did this a while back with a children's pastor out in West County, and I filled in for her a few times. She was struggling. She had a mom that she was taking care of. She was getting sick herself. I don't remember all the details, but I was able to help her. And then she kind of just stopped contacting me. And I think it was just due to depression and she couldn't handle it. And she was ashamed. And I felt that, but I just kind of backed away. You know, I just kind of let myself out kind of deal. But I'm going to this new church now. And I love the pastor. He's real. He's authentic. I don't like their worship. I don't like worship in general. So I just pray during worship. I just kind of worship myself. I close my eyes. And I pray, but I don't ask for anything. I just praise. And I feel like that's legit, right? So, but they have a children's ministry. And I even asked the pastor, do you guys have a BGMC? Because I still have a heart for BGMC. I love BGMC, the whole thing. Because what I was going to do is start tithing the money that I get from podcasting toward their BGMC. And that way they could be, you know, pumped up. They might get some trophies or something. I don't know. But he didn't think they did that. And that's fine. You know, it's fine. A lot of people don't do Rangers and Missionettes either. And that was their Wednesday night program. It's very outdated, blah, blah, blah. But a lot of the old school churches still do. BGMC was a lot of fun. We did it right. It was Boys and Girls Missionary Crusade. We did it once a month. We did it all. We did all of it. It was a blast. But no, I just wanted to share with you a little bit about what's going on. Feel like I'm back to normal. I have an emergency appointment on Monday with my psychiatrist, and it's just to tell her what's been going on before I make any drastic changes. I'm allowed to go back to what was, you know, but I'm already at my maximum on my antidepressants, and I feel like I just need a little punch up. And I can't take any more of it. So we might have to switch it up. And that's fine, honestly, because the antidepressants I'm on now are so new and therefore so expensive that there's no generic for it yet. So we're paying, I mean, it's with insurance, it's $150 a month. It's crazy. Stupid, right? Worth it, my wife says. Worth it. But it's insane how much it costs versus when I was on lithium, you know, which is nothing. It costs nothing. So I've been on everything. And that's the reason why they put me on the new stuff. And the new stuff has been great, and I'm feeling better now. And I feel kind of stupid for having an emergency session. But on Friday when I was calling in I don't know. But it's affected everything. If you listen to that story show, you know that I have found a way to do podcasting even when I don't feel like podcasting. And that is I don't prep. I put a lot of work into that story show and I read through every story. I edit them for content and to make them funnier. I find custom titles for each one of them. I recap them all. I write a song for the end. You know, there's just a lot of stuff that goes into prepping. But when I start going down, prepping seems impossible. And because I haven't prepped, I can't do the show. And because I can't do the show, it means I'm a loser because I can't even do something I enjoy. And when I was talking to my psychiatrist, she said, well, isn't there a way you could do this show without doing all that? And I know that sounds like duh, but for me, like I explained earlier, I have to shoot for excellence, and excellence is doing the best you can, not the best there is. I had never even considered doing the show with anything less than my best. And so what we've done the last 2 weeks as we call them grab bag episodes, where I just open the outbox or the inbox with all the stories in them. John and I just start chatting, having fun. I still do a recap. I mean, a rewind. I did an ad lib off the top of my head recap song at the end instead of writing it. And we tell stories, just not as many. And we don't preview them, so we don't know if they're going to be funny or not. And people in Patreon have given me feedback, and it's been mostly positive. They say that they enjoyed it. One lady said, I would listen to you guys read the phone book if you kept cracking jokes through the whole thing. And I was like, cool. Another one said it was good, and that was cool. Another one said it was good, but not as good as the real show. So as soon as you can get back to that, please do. And I'm like, that's honesty right there. And I appreciate that. I do. Because if it wasn't, if they said we like it as much, if not more, I'd be like, what have I been doing the last 19 years? You know, been working too hard. But the way I pitch it is it's either this or no show. You know, you get this or we skip a show, because I can sit down and record for some reason, but doing the prep is impossible. But I can sit down and talk. That's why a lot of times you'll still get a GOK, even if there's not a That Story Show episode, because I can sit down and do this. And sometimes I can't even do this, as you well know. But the last couple of weeks I've missed because of sadness and because of busyness. We've just been kind of busy. So I have more to tell you, but it's 47 minutes in, and I think I spent enough time on the main topic to let you go. And if there's anything I want to leave you with GOK-wise, it would be this, that excellence is not doing the best there is. It's doing the best you can with what you have. And that goes for resources, that goes for energy, that goes for time. You don't have to do the best there is. Moms, you don't have to be as good as the moms on Facebook and TikTok and freaking Instagram and all that. You don't have to be pretty every single moment. Dads, you don't have to play with the kids 24/7. You don't have to have the best job in the world. You just need to do the best you can with what you have. That is excellence. That is excellence. And I have to let myself believe that too, because That Story Show is not the best that I've ever done right now. The last two episodes is not my best, but it's the best I could do with what I had. And that needs to be okay. Because it's better to produce something than not, right? So, like, I'm not the greatest dad, not the greatest husband, but as long as I keep trying to do the best I can with what I have, then I'm an excellent dad. And so are you. And you're an excellent mom, and you're an excellent worker. You're an excellent Christian. You're an excellent atheist if you go down that road. Anyway, God bless you guys. Thank you. Email me, james@nlcast.com, if you have any comments, questions, or things that you would like to add to the show. Eventually, I need to sit down and read all of the feedback that I get from you guys. It's so awesome. I appreciate you out there listening like you do. And we'll talk to you next week, hopefully. Talk to you later. Bye.